Dr. Roger Levy, welcome to Microscopio.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
In this interview, we wanted to talk about the 5th Latin American Congress on Autoimmunity, which is going to be held in Cancun, New Mexico, from November 26th to 29th this year. And Dr. Levy, one of your conferences is about the new and upcoming treatments for APS. And our first question is, are direct oral anticoagulants in antiphospholipidic syndrome used for APS therapy?
Maybe we should, before we get there, clarify a little bit about what APS, what are we talking about? APS, which stands for antiphospholipid syndrome, is a clinical syndrome where the patient presents in various forms. It can be venous thrombosis in any size of vein. It can be arterial thrombosis, also in arteries of different sizes, and that includes the microcirculation, and also the obstetric events that can cause several obstetric complications and mainly fetal loss, but also preeclampsia and not only late fetal loss, but recurrent early fetal loss. With that, we have the laboratory that confirms the syndrome, which includes three types of tests, the lupus anticoagulant, the anticardiolipin, and the anti-beta-2 glycoprotein 1. Once you have the clinical and laboratory findings, the patient is classified as APS, and the treatment that we give to these patients nowadays is not to correct what happened in the past, but to prevent a new thrombotic event. And it is done with a vitamin K inhibitor, which is warfarin or coumadin. This is the standard of care. There are authors that like to keep the patients that had previous arterial events that we know have a higher chance of having a new arterial event that can be a stroke or a intestinal arterial thrombosis. It can be anywhere. It can cause kidney failure if it's in the kidney microcirculation. It can cause cognitive impairment or chorea in the central nervous system. So these patients with arterial events tend to be more serious, have a more severe outcome and more morbidity. And some authors, in addition to the oral anticoagulation with vitamin K inhibitor, also give low-dose aspirin, or sometimes use a higher target INR for oral anticoagulation. In these patients, we are sure to tell you that the new or the direct oral anticoagulants, they are inhibitors of factor 10 or direct thrombin inhibitors, they are not well studied and we cannot recommend them. And when we see patients that have been exposed to these agents off-label because of their easiest way of taking it, that you don't have to check the INR, you don't have to adjust the dosage, these patients with APS, we have seen quite a few, more than a few, I can say, complications and several serious complications. So in our opinion, it's too early to say that the direct oral anticoagulants are recommended for patients with antiphospholipid in general. They can be used in an individual case, I would say lower risk, with less secondary risk factors, and definitely that didn't have an arterial thrombotic event in the past.
So are direct oral anticoagulants in antiphospholipidic syndrome used for APS therapy?
I can summarize. You can use in a certain individual case with low risk profile, and that definitely didn't have an arterial event.
A new class of oral anticoagulant drugs emerged, with the advantage of not requiring a laboratory control, with the added benefit of being very little influence from food or other medication. Is this used in APS?
This group of new drugs, they're not so new anymore. That's why we're not calling them new. They are direct oral anticoagulants. So the acronym is DOAC, DOACs. In my opinion, in my experience, I wouldn't recommend to every patient with APS, because we know there are certain patients at high risk of arterial events, and they have recurrent events and sometimes serious events on these direct agents. So although they could be good for certain types of patients with venous thrombotic events in APS, I would not recommend them in general. I have patients that take it, but they're very selected, low risk, and for a reason. They cannot control their INR in a proper way with Coumadin. They're resistant to Coumadin, but never to a patient with past arterial event.
So the following one is, what drug would you choose when there are APS and concomitant rheumatoid arthritis?
That's kind of tricky. People with APS need to be on oral anticoagulation with Coumadin. So far, that's the recommendation we have for the general APS population. Check the INR and also, of course, control all the other thrombotic risk factors, namely hypertension, hyperhomocysteinemia, high LDL. This all has to be controlled. You can't have a patient with APS that is a smoker, obese with high LDL. And in addition to that, we are looking for new agents, but we have no data so far. In catastrophic APS, where there is real life risk, there is data with rituximab, not a randomized controlled trial, but it can be used. And there are good results, open label. And rituximab is a drug approved for rheumatoid arthritis. So if you want to use rituximab to treat RA in a patient with APS, that's not a problem. It will actually help the patient. But we don't have a license to treat APS with rituximab. With belimumab, which is approved for lupus, there is data showing that it decreases the titers of the antibodies, but we have no studies talking or aiming at answering the question about prevention of thrombosis. If that decrease of the antibody titer or even negativation can lead to a protection in the outcome, we need a study to answer that question. Concerning the anti-TNFs, they are used and approved for rheumatoid arthritis. And now there is a protocol that is going on, approved by the FDA, including patients that lost babies with antiphospholipid syndrome in spite of the treatment with heparin and aspirin. So in this study, they are including the patients that had previous losses on heparin and aspirin and giving them sertralizumab, which is Cimzia, an anti-TNF that is known not to cross the placenta, in addition to heparin, low molecular weight heparin and aspirin in the first pregnancy in order to see if it prevents fetal loss in spite of heparin treatment. So this is new, ongoing. There's no result about this. So there is no recommendation on what to give a patient with rheumatoid arthritis. You have to treat both and, again, individualize.
And you were anticipating some of the topics of your other conference, which is about synthetic and biologic therapy during pregnancy and lactancy of patients with systemic lupus erythematosus, SLE. And we wanted to ask you that treatment during pregnancy and lactancy may alert doctors about the use of some medicine or drugs. What is the safer synthetic or biological therapy for pregnancy and latency with patients with systemic lupus erythematosus?
So we're going to talk about the importance, and the most important word that the whole conference has is planning, is counseling. So we are going to talk about pregnancy planning and contraception and how the treatment has to be adjusted. First, we have to remind the audience that the disease under control is a much better situation in order to have a conception and a pregnancy, the more absent of complications the possible. So disease controlled. Then we have to see what is the medication that the patient is taking, and then adjust this medication in order to control the disease and not affect the conception and not affect the first part of pregnancy where the chromosomal abnormalities are more common. So we have to adjust the treatment. So the big villain in rheumatology when we talk about pregnancy is the use of methotrexate. We know that methotrexate is teratogenic and it's abortive. So the patients on it have to be aware of the importance of contraception and again the importance of pregnancy planning. When they are thinking about it, they should tell their doctors, and this medication, methotrexate, has to be stopped before 2 months before conception and not to be used during pregnancy, not to be used during lactation. The same for leflunomide and the same for mycophenolate, which we are increasingly seeing nowadays because much more patients with lupus are being treated with mycophenolate than in the past were with cyclophosphamide. And they are getting pregnant because they're not properly counseled, or could be both, because they're not using the contraception in the right form. So these three are the most important ones in ladies. For men, only sulfasalazine can cause temporary related to the time used, and it can come back to normal after stopped with sulfasalazine. So in male, sulfasalazine can cause temporary oligospermia, and it can reverse once it stopped after a while. Concerning the biologics, the anti-TNFs, where we have more data, including the data from patients with inflammatory bowel disease, we know that they are safe for males and females to be used during conception, and they can be used in the first trimester with no problem, meaning they don't cause teratogenicity or abortion. The problem now is not with the whole class of anti-TNFs, but with certain molecules, the ones that are the monoclonal antibodies, because they cross the placenta after 28 weeks. So they start crossing around 24, they peak from 28 to 32. So if you use it until the end of pregnancy or after this period, the babies, once they're born, they are not recommended to be given the BCG vaccine, the vaccine that we use in newborns in Brazil and I understand in Latin American countries. So it's important to know that this cannot be given to those that took the monoclonal antibodies, namely adalimumab, infliximab, and golimumab. With certolizumab and also with etanercept, the placenta crossing is much, much less, almost undetectable. And there are studies with certolizumab that have been published recently that show that they can be used safely during pregnancy because they don't cross the placenta and neither do they cross the milk. So this is reassuring because it's a treatment option for these patients. Although they are not recommended to be used in pregnancy on the insert package, now we are knowing that the disease needs to be controlled, and these drugs that are highly effective can be used safely during pregnancy and lactation.
Is there any final comment you would like to say?
I think when we talk about pregnancy, the most important word is always planning, and we see that contraception is far from ideal, even if the patient is taking a drug that is not to be used during pregnancy and conception. So that's the message.
Thank you very much, Dr. Roger Levy. It's been a pleasure to have this interview in Microscopio.